Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. On our Capitol Report today, we'll have details on the first federal indictments and guilty plea obtained under Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller's probe. Locally, we'll have the latest toll from the Hepatitis A outbreak and new action taken by El Cajon City Council to combat the disease by limiting feeding of the homeless in public parks. Today we have a special report on efforts by large utility companies to stick ratepayers with the bills for wildfires caused by utilities' negligence, including ex parte communications with regulators outside the public eye, and how a new lawsuit and legislative effort may influence your utility bills. The next time you tank up, you'll be paying more, after a state gas tax hike kicks in, and we'll have details. Today we have a spotlight on Santee, reporting on a new multiplex theater complex coming to town and a mobility plan approved by the City Council to improve transportation and create a new park for the community. On Crime Beat, hear about a serial bank robber called the Chameleon captured in El Cajon. On Bookshelf, Raina Menashe interviews Donald Harrison, who will be sharing an excerpt out of his new book, 77 Miles of Jewish Stories, featuring tales found along every off-ramp on Interstate 8 in East County, including a very moving story involving former Viejas Tribal Chairman Anthony Pico. Hear about a Wine Aid fundraiser this Saturday at the Bernardo Winery to help wine workers who have lost work due to those Northern California wildfires. On Green Scene, learn about efforts by California's Attorney General Javier Becerra to halt the Trump administration rollback of clean water rules. We'll also have news about a probation grant to monitor high-risk DUI offenders in San Diego County. On sports, Liz Alper has news about the Aztecs' latest win. Plus, learn how you can help the homeless with a food drive in El Cajon. We'll have all these stories on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. This is Miriam Raftery with a Capitol Report. George Papadopoulos, foreign policy advisor to Donald Trump's presidential campaign, has pled guilty to criminal charges pertaining to his dealings with Russian foreign nationals. Two others, Trump's former campaign manager Paul Manafort and his business associate Rick Gates, have been arrested and indicted on felony charges, court documents unsealed last Monday reveal. The 12 counts include charges of conspiracy against the United States, failing to register as a foreign agent, making false statements to federal investigators, tax fraud, and laundering tens of millions of dollars through offshore accounts for clients in the Ukraine, including former Ukrainian President Viktor Yanukovych, Associated Press reports. Yanukovych was a staunch ally of Russian dictator Vladimir Putin. There's a large-scale ongoing investigation of which this case is only a small part, Andrew S. Jade Zielinski, a prosecutor on Robert Mueller's special prosecution team, told the court during Papadopoulos' plea hearing earlier this month, the New York Times reports. Papadopoulos emails an admission of a meeting at Trump Tower in June 2016 that included Donald Trump Jr., the president's son, and Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law, indicate the Russian government offered to help Trump's candidacy. Russian operatives later hacked Hillary Clinton's email account and leaked embarrassing communications to the media. The investigation is looking to determine who in the Trump campaign knew and what was involved in that effort, but further, whether anyone in the campaign may have been involved in fake media campaigns paid for by Russia on social media and/or Russian efforts to penetrate multiple states' election systems, acknowledged in Senate hearings. The investigation is impacting both political parties. Tony Podesta, a Democratic lobbyist whose firm was hired to do lobbying for the Ukraine, quit his lobbying job Monday and could also be targeted in the probe, as could members of Congress, the Attorney General, and others potentially. Mueller's mandate is broad, covering not only Russian efforts to influence the election and any Americans involved in such a conspiracy, but also any other criminal actions he may uncover, potentially including state crimes that could not be pardoned by the president. Conspiracy-related charges, if that conspiracy were to involve Trump or his family, also could not be eliminated with presidential pardons. And the word conspiracy is used frequently in the indictments unsealed so far. Just how high Mueller's probe may go remains to be seen, but it could potentially include White House officials and even the president himself. Some have speculated that Trump could fire Mueller, but Republican Judiciary Chairman Charles Grassley has urged that the president not do so and let the special counsel do his job, The Hill reports. Trump tweeted no collusion and noted that Manafort's alleged crimes involving the Ukraine did occur before he joined the Trump campaign, adding, "But why aren't crooked Hillary and the Dems the focus?" While major media likened the process to Watergate and provided substantial coverage of those indictments, some conservative news sites downplayed the stories and quickly moved them off the homepage. Fox News, The New York Post, and Wall Street Journal, which are all owned by Rupert Murdoch, for instance, put more focus on sexual harassment scandals involving Harvey Weinstein and Kevin Spacey, as well as a story on a hamburger emoji, than on the first arrests, indictments, and guilty plea brought as a result of Mueller's investigation. Now, the special prosecutor's strategy of releasing info on Papadopoulos, cutting a plea deal, presumably in exchange for leniency for sharing information on others higher up in the chain of command, and possibly even wearing a wire, on the same day indictments against Manafort and Gates were announced, puts pressure on other key players to cooperate with investigators by cutting deals. While Papadopoulos may get off with a relatively light sentence, Manafort could face up to 80 years behind bars and could yet face additional charges.
This is John Fisteer with a health report. The death toll from hepatitis A in San Diego County has now reached 20, with 536 cases confirmed since November of last year, when the outbreak began. There is some good news, however. The rate of new cases has been falling in recent weeks, but since hepatitis has a long incubation period, more new cases are anticipated locally. In addition, cases tied to the San Diego strain of hepatitis A have now been identified in Arizona, Colorado, and other parts of California. Nearly two-thirds of the victims have been either homeless, users of illicit drugs, or both, according to the county health department. In El Cajon, where patient zero is believed to have been from, the city council last week temporarily banned feeding of homeless people in public places, such as parks, though only until the epidemic is over. The ban does not apply to other public gatherings, such as family reunions or birthday parties in parks. To date, the county has spent over $4 million to combat hepatitis A, including power washing streets, installing hand washing stations, and providing vaccinations to at-risk populations and those who serve them. The disease, which causes liver damage, is most often transmitted by sharing food or touching items handled by infected persons, as well as through sexual contact with someone who is infected with the virus.
The battle over who should pay for the costs of wildfires caused by utilities is heating up. The California Public Utilities Commission has postponed for the third time making a decision on a proposal by San Diego Gas and Electric Company to charge ratepayers for its uninsured losses from the 2007 wildfires. Disclosure documents filed with the California Public Utilities Commission revealed that an ex parte meeting between representatives of Pacific Gas and Electric Company, Southern California Edison, and a PUC advisor to Commissioner Leanne Randolph on October 4th regarding SDG&E's application. Edison's attorney Eric Liskin led the discussion, arguing that recent appellate assumed that all costs incurred by a utility resulting from inverse condemnation claims, such as in the wildfires cases, will be collected from customers in rate hikes, and that no portion of such costs will be paid by shareholders. He argued that the authority regarding inverse condemnation costs is limited to determining if amounts paid to settle inverse condemnation claims and defense costs incurred by a utility are reasonable. He contends that the PUC has other tools to address prudence by a utility in its operations, including enforcement proceedings and penalties of up to $50,000 a day. The utilities contend that ratepayers, not shareholders, should be stuck with the cost of damages caused by wildfires, even if utilities are negligent. Last week, one outraged San Diego consumer filed a lawsuit seeking to force approval of a PUC ruling barring SDG&E from passing on $379 million of its wildfire costs to consumers. Taxpayer Ruth Hendricks, represented by former city attorney Michael Aguirre, accuses the PUC in a federal complaint of twice refusing to confirm a decision that denied SDG&E's application to pass along those costs to ratepayers. The decision was made in August by two PUC administrative law judges who found that SDG&E, quote, did not reasonably manage and operate its facilities prior to the 2007 Southern California wildfires. Hendricks accuses the PUC of delaying action to provide an opportunity for SDG&E and other utility monopolies, namely PG&E and Edison, neither of which were parties in the proceedings, to meet privately with the commissioner and lobby against the administrative law judge's proposed decision denying SDG&E's request to lay the burden of its 2007 wildfire costs on ratepayers, instead of on the management, which CAL FIRE and the PUC had found acted imprudently and unreasonably, the complaint states. It further accuses the PUC regulatory agency of being under control of utilities it is mandated to regulate, thus violating consumers' due process. Hendricks, who did participate in hearings on the evidence and cross-examined witnesses on fire costs, contends that defendant Michael Picker, the PUC president, acted improperly when he allowed SDG&E to make arguments in ex parte private communications with commission advisors outside of the public hearing process, similar to the ex parte private meetings that PG&E and Edison representatives have now had with the PUC. Both PG&E and Edison have been added as parties to the SDG&E case proceedings, according to Courthouse News. Investigators suggest that power lines in Northern California were to blame for some of the recent devastating wildfires there, just as three of the 2007 fires were found by CAL FIRE to have been caused by SDG&E lines, along with Cox Cable equipment in one of the blazes. SDG&E has repeatedly contended that its equipment was properly maintained and has denied that its lines were at fault for the fires. The company has also noted that it has made significant investment in fire hardening its infrastructures and other safety improvements since the 2007 fire storms. Now PG&E and Edison seek to raise an inverse condemnation defense in order to pass along costs of uninsured wildfire losses to ratepayers. Hendricks seeks an injunction to prohibit the CPUC from authorizing such charges. The legislature is also weighing in. A bill being drafted in Sacramento would prevent utilities from charging ratepayers for wildfires caused by the company's negligence. The author, Jerry Hill of San Mateo, calls the practice an outrage in a press release on the measure, adding, "Victims of devastating fires and other customers should not be forced to pay for the mistakes made by utilities. It's time to stop allowing utilities to push the burden of their negligence onto the backs of customers." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Meridian Broadus.
The next time you pull in at the pump, you'll be paying more. Taxes on gasoline and diesel went up starting Wednesday this week to pay for repairing California's crumbling roads and bridges that are in danger of collapse, as well as to improve public transportation. Under Senate Bill 1, signed by Governor Jerry Brown in April, the gas excise tax rises 12 cents a gallon, while diesel fuel will cost you 20 cents a gallon more. You'll also be paying more for your vehicle registration, though that cost increase doesn't kick in until January 1st. Those increases could be repealed, however, if a ballot initiative in the works makes it onto the ballot and is approved by voters. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
This is Miriam Raftery with a spotlight on Santee. Cinemark Theaters won approval from the Santee City Council Wednesday to operate a multiplex movie theater that will be built on a 7-acre parcel purchased last spring from the county near the Santee Town Center shopping mall. Cinemark won out over Studio Movie Grill, a smaller movie chain operator based in Texas that had also sought to negotiate a contract with Santee. The multiplex will have up to 12 theaters, with auditoriums designed so they may be adapted for multipurpose use with high-end 4K digital video projectors. A large auditorium will also be available for blockbuster movie presentations with a 70-foot screen and 60 high-end loudspeakers. Each auditorium will feature lounge recliner seats with footrests and food trays. Patrons will be able to order a full menu of mixed cocktails, beer, and wine, along with other items, from a large concession area with expanded food selection, candy bins, ice cream, craft beer, and Starbucks coffee. A smartphone app will be developed to allow tickets and food to be purchased online. Before the vote, the City of Santee provided on its website a poll of questions about what residents would like from a premium multiplex movie theater, and some 2,400 resident surveys were tabulated. While Cinemark got the nod from the City Council, several council members advised that Cinemark must step up its offerings, especially in light of a wider and better food menu proposed by Studio Movie Grill. If final negotiations fail with Cinemark, the city would then pursue the contract with Studio Movie Grill without further council action needed. Cinemark ended up with 5 thumbs up from the City Council. According to Vice Mayor Ron Hall, negotiations with Cinemark are expected to be completed in January, with an anticipated opening of the multiplex in 2019. Now, getting to the new movie theater when it's built in the quickest and safest way was also on the minds of council members in their discussion of another item on the agenda, a mobility element study produced by San Diego-based traffic engineering firm Chen Ryan Associates. The study tries to update the current City of San Diego General Plan 2020, which was adopted back in 2003, to provide a vision and framework for development of the city's transportation facilities and how traffic flows through the city. This includes personal vehicles as well as public transportation, ride-sharing, bicycles, and pedestrians. The presentation included discussion about extending Mast Boulevard into Lakeside, an ongoing political hot potato for members of the City Council and their constituents every time this has come up for consideration in the past. The proposal to open Mast Boulevard to Lakeside has long been opposed by some Santee residents fearful of more traffic in their neighborhoods and by Preserve Wild Santee, which contends this would open the door to more development and congestion. But the idea is supported by some residents of nearby Lakeside seeking easier access to Santee and Highway 52. In a 4-1 vote, the City Council made a landmark decision to turn most of the 1.5 acres into a hiking trail and a park, a plan which was considered 4 years ago on the site of the proposed Mast Boulevard extension. 4 years ago is when the Council began to look at developing amenities, including a loop trail connected to a river trail, parking, benches, landscaping, a playground, and a dog park or run at the new park, which boasts a scenic view of the Laguna Mountains. Another major consideration was that developing this area as a roadway into Lakeside would have cost $8 million, of which $6 million would have been borne by the City of Santee taxpayers. The mobility plan also includes new bicycle-friendly improvements in the city.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Meridian Broadus with a Crime Beat Report. El Cajon resident Darius Demon Lake is under arrest for suspicion of committing 8 bank robberies in San Diego County and 1 in Temecula. A second suspect, Brian Lee Barkley, also of El Cajon, was arrested for participating in 1 of 3 El Cajon bank heists. The crime spree began on October 5th with a bank robbery in El Cajon. The suspect gained the name Chameleon from the FBI's Joint Bank Robbery Task Force and the San Diego Violent Crimes Task Force due to changing his appearance in later robberies. Walt Miller with the El Cajon Police Department says, Physical evidence was left by both suspects at the scene of one of the El Cajon bank heists, linking them to the robberies. Arrest warrants were issued for both men. An El Cajon officer on patrol recognized one of the suspects near Main and Mollison and took him into custody. Later in the evening, an El Cajon detective recognized the Chameleon Bandit on East Madison Avenue, and he was apprehended a short time later. No weapons were seen at any of the robberies. However, demands were made by the suspects, causing the employees of the banks to give the men cash. Both suspects were booked into San Diego County Jail for robbery. Anyone with any further information is asked to call the El Cajon Police Department at 619-579-3311 or the FBI at 858-320-1800.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing Donald H. Harrison, author of the new book, 77 Miles of Jewish Stories. This book, as the title suggests, takes the reader along on a 77-mile journey through I-8 to visit Jews at work as well as different Jewish institutions. My guest has also written three previous books, Schlepping Through the American West, Waxy, An American Family Business Success Story, and A Biography of Louis Rose, San Diego's First Jewish Settler. Wow, that's quite a mouthful. Welcome, Don. It's great having you on Bookshelf.
Thank you, Raina.
Let's start with your new book. In it, you introduce your reader to all kinds of Jewish workers, doctors, lawyers, and alpaca farmer and football players. Give us a behind-the-scenes look at this travelogue. What was it like to encounter such diversity?
Well, Raina, being, you know, Jewish all my life, I expected the diversity, but what I didn't know was what there would be on the next freeway exit. The concept behind the book was get on the freeway, get off at every exit, find a Jewish story. Some were easy, because there were Jewish institutions, but other ones were, you had to go searching for it. You had to go reconnoiter first and finally find a suggestion of a possibility and then find the story. But the reason that I did this is because I sense that there's a nexus between a location, a place, and a story. I'll give you an example. Let's imagine I was going to give you a lecture on the War of 1812. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you'd fall asleep about 5 minutes into it. But if I were to give you that same lecture, and let's say we were in the harbor in Baltimore looking at Fort McHenry, perhaps from the same vantage point that Francis Scott Key had just before he wrote The Star-Spangled Banner, suddenly you and other listeners might be much more interested. So I have always gravitated towards finding stories that have places prominently within them. For me, this developed over some years. I had been serving as the press secretary to the acting mayor of San Diego, Bill Cleeter, when Queen Elizabeth II came to visit San Diego. And we had to put together for the visiting press, there was over 700 of them, a little guide to all the different places that Her Majesty would be visiting. There were something like 18 venues that she visited. And those descriptions of those places, which were pulled together from the institutions themselves, found their way into many of those stories. Another time, I had a public relations agency, and we helped to start the Old Town Trolley Tours of San Diego. And that is very much site-specific. You write a script, and it has to be the trolley conductor needs to be there and speaking about it the moment the trolley is passing a particular site. And so I found that people are really interested in what they're seeing if someone could tell them about it as they see it. There have been other instances, but that's what led me to the idea of site-specific journalism.
It's like you specialize in living history and finding it and creating it.
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement.
When you got off at the exit, sometimes you would start with an institution, but how did you find people?
Well, I'm a member of a synagogue in the East County, Tiferet Israel Synagogue. And so a lot of our members live out that way. And I would say, well, do you know anybody that's lives off of exit 34 or 35 or, you know, and so forth? And people did. So I would get some suggestions. Other times, as I mentioned, you just get off the freeway on your own and you start driving around, you start noting what's there. And then you go back to your internet and you start researching these various places and see if there's something that connects.
So a combination of the internet and schmoozing.
Yeah, schmoozing.
Well, which interview stands out the most in your mind that's in this book? Or is there one that you found most surprising or entertaining or fascinating for some reason?
Yeah, I would use the term fascinating because there are several interviews that really got into the interrelationships between Jews and other ethnic groups or religious groups.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the kinds of stories that I really find very interesting. So there are stories about Jews and Roman Catholics. There are Jews and Chaldean Catholics, Jews and African Americans, Jews and Native Americans, and so forth. Lots of different groups. And as I got to write those stories, I got to learn not only about my own culture, but about theirs.
So can you identify one interview? Does one stand out in your mind?
I do have one that maybe I'll even have the chance to read on this show about Native Americans, which I think shows some interesting parallels between the Native American experience and the Jewish experience.
Yes, let's do that. Let's have you read an excerpt from your book.
All right. It is for anyone that's interested. I'm talking about Exit 33, the Viejas Indian Reservation. There was a dinner sometime before, actually was off the reservation, but it dealt with people who live there, particularly the head of the Viejas band, and that's Anthony Pico. And Anthony Pico had been honored by the American Jewish Committee for all of the things that he had done. And I'm going to read from his response. He surprised him. He kind of turned the tables. Whereas they wanted to honor him, he decided to honor the Jewish community. And he said, you know, we've both faced extermination and survived a Holocaust. Indians were not sent to gas chambers. Our prisoners of war camps came with blankets infected with disease that were more lethal than even bullets. In their zeal and greed to reach their manifest destiny, the strangers took our land and took pride in the slogan that the only good Indian is a dead Indian. In California, it was legal to shoot an Indian on sight, to purchase homeless Indians in auctions for slave labor, and steal Indian children from their parents to, quote, save, unquote, them from their primitive ways. Our religious ceremonies were banned as satanical, and many have been lost from our memory as a result. Pico went on to say that as a Native American, he can, quote, sympathize with the ferocious love and militancy Jews bring to protecting Israel. We know the value of having a homeland, a place where you are free to exercise your own destiny and be a family. How Jews have managed to survive as a people amidst strangers and strange lands without a land for so many centuries is an absolute miracle as far as I'm concerned. He said, our reservations aren't as grand as our original lands, but they represent the continuation, security, and future to us. Native Americans, like Jews, will always rise to fight when our homelands are threatened. Tonight it seems appropriate for me to return the honor and pay tribute to the gifts that the Jewish community shares with all the world, the Viejas chairman said. One of the most important is showing how our people, struggling to be free, can preserve our humanity when the world chooses to treat us inhumanely. Jews have always been the first to speak out against injustice and inhumane practices in the United States. I know the greatness in your heart and spirit comes from the terrors of the past. I also know from experience that it is not an easy thing to do to maintain tolerance and empathy for others when your own life is at stake. Living defensively takes a toll on the human spirit.
Wow. That's really beautiful.
Yeah, he really had an impact on the crowd. There were many tears in the audience's mm-hmm. eyes as they recognized the similarity. And I think that's for us as writers, authors, journalists, being able to point those similarities out to show the connection that we have, even though we seem to come from so many different places. It's one of the important things that we can do.
Right. We don't automatically think of Native Americans having so much in common with Jewish people.
Well, you know, of course, we refer to ourselves as a tribe, too. Yeah.
Right. Right. Well, I know that you're also a journalist. Since 1962, you've been a journalist, right? And working for the UCLA Daily Bruin, the Los Angeles Times, and the San Diego Union. And since 1986, you've written your Jewish stories, not only about San Diego, but about the rest of the world. So how does your day job figure into what you're doing as an author? You're a publisher and editor of the San Diego Jewish World. Does that influence you and inspire you to write your books, or how is it connected?
Well, it's very much connected in that every day I'm covering the Jewish world, and so every day I'm running into stories that I can retell at a later time. I had a cousin, his name was Richard Yaffe, and Dick was a very well-known Jewish journalist on the East Coast. He was the UN correspondent for the Jewish Chronicle of London, and he wrote for the Jewish Week of New York, and he was very, very well-known. And one time he was sitting in my living room, and I said, gee, the Jewish world, isn't that too narrow a subject for you? I mean, don't you feel that it's awful limiting? And kindly, but nevertheless, he laughed at me and he said, limiting? He says, it's all I can do to even possibly keep up, because Jewish journalism is very much like local or regional journalism. The concept is to find a story that relates to your people, and whether it be your people in your region, like in the East County, mm-hmm. or whether it be your people who are ethnically or religiously of your group, and then to show how they relate to the larger stories that we cover. And so I find myself covering very, very large stories all the time, but looking specifically for the Jewish angle in those stories.
So it's sharing stories too, communication between the groups, the smaller group and the larger group.
Yeah, very definitely so.
In your last book, Schlepping Through the American West, love that title, you and your grandson went on an odyssey from San Diego to Alberta, Canada. So how does this 77-mile journey on the I-8 differ from that other travelogue?
Well, the Schlepping Through the American West was really a 3,000-mile tour. If you, by the time you go up the 15 to Canada and then come back, you've put quite a few miles on your car. This was just 77 miles, and I was more constrained. I had to get off at every exit and find a Jewish story there. I couldn't pick and choose like I did on the longer tour.
So the shorter one was harder in a sense.
In a sense, because, yeah. I had to find my story right there. And the concept that we have on our newspaper, the motto over our masthead, our online newspaper, is there's a Jewish story everywhere. And the concept was, let's go out and prove it. And that's why we did it this way, is to, you know, we started at the beach at where the I-8 begins, and we took it all the way to the Imperial County line. And that's the 77 miles of I-8. There are 35 exits in that period. And we found 70 stories, an average of two an exit, at least one at every one.
It sounds like fun.
It is fun. And I think that any ethnicity could do it. If mm-hmm. Somebody who's out there listening who's Irish or who's Mexican-American or who is Asian, Chinese, Japanese, whatever your ethnicity, I think particularly in California, it would be easy to replicate that kind of a trip, but reach into your own historic
sure.
background.
How long did it take you, the whole thing?
Well, the series ran initially on San Diego Jewish World, one a week. And so I got myself a head start
okay.
on it. And then while it was, the series was running, I was a couple exits ahead on the freeway.
Right.
So altogether about 2 years.
Great. Well, you've been referred to as a highly valued wandering Jew rather than a wandering Jew. In your view, how are your stories, you talked about this a little already, but how are they particularly relevant to people from different backgrounds and faith?
Well, I think that there's a great curiosity about Jews among non-Jews. At least I've encountered it. People ask me questions all the time about mm-hmm. why we do this, why we do that. And this book provides some of the answers, especially those stories within it that deal with the institutions that are run along the I-8. For example, we cover some synagogues, a mikveh, which is the ceremonial, bath, you might say, that a person takes for conversion or mm-hmm. for family purity reasons. So those customs are covered in the book. So if someone has that interest, for sure. But also because we write as well about some of their faiths in terms of the interactions they may be right. having with the Jewish community. And so hopefully that's interesting to them. And then some of the stories are universal. You know, it just so happens that the person involved is Jewish, but anybody could be an alpaca farmer. You don't have to be Jewish to do that. Or anyone could be perhaps somebody like Catherine Hand, who has a facility that uses horses to help people overcome their various disabilities, mm-hmm. Riding and so forth. It's an equestrian center. And so they're very fascinating people who, they're Jewish, but they're also, you might say, there's general interest about what they do.
And I'm thinking also universal themes such as survival.
Exactly, exactly. And some of the stories are sports stories, and doesn't mm-hmm. everybody love sports?
Right.
You know, so.
So one last question.
Sure.
What are you writing next?
Well, actually, next I'm compiling stories from the past about places that I visited with Jewish stories across the country and all around the world. And I'm going to put those into one book and maybe even more, depending on just how many we got there.
And when should we expect to see the first one?
Oh, I think it's going to be sometime next year. Let's get this one out first.
Okay. Okay. Well, our time is up, but thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed being with you.
For more information on Donald H. Harrison's books, please visit sdjewishworld.com. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Valerie Watts
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This is Miriam Raftery.
And this is Liz Alpin,
guest hosting Destination East County. This week's Destination East County includes a wildlife walk, live hawk demonstration, and world music ensemble concert at Mission Trails, an autumn fest at the Water Conservation Garden, the Ramona Art and Wine Fest, and acoustic concerts at the Rancho San Diego and Ramona Libraries.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including Veterans Day activities at Grossmont Center, a Veterans Day commemoration in El Cajon, the Mother Goose Parade, a holiday hayride, and many more activities at Four Cross Old-Timey Adventures in Santa Isabel, plus a Joy in Country Christmas celebration later this month.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
Mission Trails Regional Park invites you to join in several events this weekend, including a wildlife tracking walk on Saturday, November 4th, starting at 8:30 a.m. in the Visitor Center. On Sunday, November 5th, you can see a live hawk demonstration at 9 a.m. and enjoy a concert by the Mesa College World Music Ensemble at 3 p.m. Both of these events are also at the Visitor Center. For details, you can visit the Mission Trails Regional Park website at mtrp.org.
The Water Conservation Garden at Cuyamaca College will hold its Autumn Fest and Plant Sale on November 4th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. The campus is located in the Rancho San Diego area of El Cajon. This event features live entertainment, craft vendors, plant sales, kids' activities, gardening workshops, Ask the Designer landscape consultations, advice from water agencies, and a beer garden. For more information, you can visit thegarden.org.
The 5th annual Ramona Art and Wine Festival will be held at Beechant Ranch in Ramona on Saturday, November 4th from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Guests can view and purchase fine art in a variety of mediums, taste handcrafted wines, appetizers, lunch entrees, and desserts while picnicking in style beneath the shade of a giant oak tree. Vendors will also be on hand offering art and wine-themed items. A highlight of the event will be a live auction of 6 wine barrels painted by local artists. For tickets and details, you can visit RamonaArtAndWineFest.net.
The San Diego County Library's acoustic concert series includes a performance at the Rancho San Diego Branch Library on Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. by Lisa Sanders, who channels the vocal strength of Chaka Khan and the dusty edge of Bonnie Raitt as she belts out songs filled with world-weary experiences and hope. On Thursday, November 9th at 6 p.m., Dusty and the Love Notes will be performing at the Ramona Branch Library. This California folk rock band was influenced by Bonnie Raitt, Lucinda Williams, Sheryl Crow, and Neil Young. On Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th, Grossmont Center is pulling out all the stops to honor our nation's veterans. The event kicks off at 6 p.m. Friday evening in the courtyard with a concert by the Navy's Southwest 32nd Street Brass Band, which will be performing traditional New Orleans jazz, Navy favorites, and pop tunes. Then November 10th, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., the Oasis Wellness Center at Grossmont Center will host a technology fair. From noon until 7 p.m., Max FM and the Mighty 1090 will put on a celebration complete with Hummer photo ops. From 3 to 5 p.m., all veterans, active and former military and their families are invited to an ice cream social. And from 5 to 7 p.m., all are welcome at the Heroes Concert next to the food court. All through the day, veterans will be treated to haircuts by Rico's Barbershop, as well as makeup sessions and skin analysis by Avia Hair Salon and Day Spa. Grossmont Center is partnering with the La Mesa and East County Chambers of Commerce, Crisis House, La Mesa Parks and Recreation, and the East County Homeless Task Force, as well as many of the center's businesses at this memorable event to celebrate the men and women who have served our country.
The City of El Cajon and the El Cajon Veteran Commission will host a special ceremony honoring our veterans on Veterans Day, November 11th. The ceremony will take place from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. at Centennial Plaza in downtown El Cajon, and the community is invited.
The 71st Annual Mother Goose Parade will be on November 19th, the Sunday before Thanksgiving. This year's parade theme is Family Traditions. The parade begins at 1 p.m. You can see over 100 colorful and exciting parade entries, including floats, marching bands, clowns, equestrians, local dignitaries, TV celebrities, and Santa Claus. The parade grand marshal is Randy Jones, the former San Diego Padre and Cy Young Award winner. The parade route runs along downtown's Main Street from El Cajon Boulevard eastbound to First. The popular parade is one of the largest parades in Southern California and a wonderful way to officially kick off the holiday season. You can learn more at mothergooseparade.org.
Fort Cross Old-Timey Adventures in Santa Isabel, just outside of Julian, will be offering a holiday hayride activity package on November 25th from 10 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Activities include a holiday hayride with caroling, candle dipping, rustic ornament making, cider pressing, a country hoedown, petting zoo, tomahawk throwing, rope making, a ghost town, slingshot range, hoops and stick relay races, nature walks, and a tire sling. For more information, visit fortcross.com.
Christmas comes to Julian every year in an old-fashioned way with a country Christmas tree lighting celebration on November 26th to start the holiday season. Festivities begin at 2 p.m. and continue until 7 p.m., including lighting of a giant natural Christmas tree in Pioneer Park, just one block from Julian's historic town hall. You'll feel a nip in the air, sniff wood fires, and maybe catch a glimpse of snow-capped mountains surrounding the town. The holiday season in Julian also offers an opportunity to shop at small boutiques and craft shows for one-of-a-kind gifts. After the lighting of the giant Christmas tree donated by the Julian Merchants Association, children can also enjoy visits with Santa Claus.
That's all for this week.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around East County!
San Diego County winemakers are pulling together to host a fundraiser to help winery workers who have been displaced by devastating fires in Northern California's wine country, as well as animals harmed by the fire. With recovery efforts underway in Sonoma, Napa, and Santa Rosa counties, the impacts of the firestorms are now being seen, and the number of displaced people is staggering. So, the Bernardo Winery in Rancho Bernardo will hold a wine and food tasting event on November 12th from 1 to 4 p.m., partnering with other San Diego County wineries and restaurants to support winery and vineyard workers and their families who have lost their homes or been displaced in these devastating fires to reestablish their households. 100% of the online ticket sales for Wine Aid 2017 will go to those families through a relief fund that has been established by the Sonoma County Grape Growers Association. At-the-door ticket sales will support the Sonoma County SPCA, which is offering no-cost veterinary treatment for burned animals and boarding for lost animals. Ross Rizzo, president and winemaker at Bernardo Winery, says, "People forget how much work it takes to make wine. Early mornings, scorching heat, and long days to get wine to table. We appreciate the workers and would like to help them up north, wine country to wine country." Many wineries from across San Diego, including East County, will be participating in the November 12th Wine Aid event at the Bernardo Winery, which has been producing wine since 1889 and is the oldest continually producing winery in Southern California, keeping its doors open through its own tough times by making sacramental wine for churches and grape juice during the Prohibition era. More recently, many vintners here in San Diego County recall the 2003 and 2007 firestorms when some local vintners lost their harvests or even their homes. Now these local winemakers are giving back, helping winemakers in Northern California in their time of need. The Wine Aid event will include wine and food tasting, live acoustic music, and a silent auction. For information on where to buy tickets, you can visit eastcountymagazine.org and click our food and wine section, or check the hashtag WineAid2017 on Twitter for more information. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Valerie Watts.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is John Fistier with a Green Scene Report. California Attorney General Xavier Becerra has filed opposition, along with several other states, to the Trump administration's attempt to repeal the Clean Water Rule, which protects California's lakes, rivers, and streams from pollution discharges. The 2015 Clean Water Rule sought to address significant issues with the prior definition of waters of the United States. For decades, the pre-2015 definition has been interpreted differently among the courts, leading to confusion, unpredictability, and inconsistent application of the Clean Water Act. The Clean Water Rule clarified the definition of waters of the United States to explicitly include waters in floodplains, riparian areas, and intermittent and ephemeral streams. This was an especially important development for the state of California, as the majority of California's streams and rivers are intermittent or ephemeral. Trump signed executive orders requiring the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, or EPA, and the Corps of Engineers to review the Obama-era Clean Water Rule, which Trump called a massive power grab. The president claims that regulations and permits started treating our wonderful small farmers and small businessmen as if they were major industrial polluters. But NPR's Greg Allen reported, "Overturning the rule isn't something that can be done through executive order. The EPA would have to restart the lengthy rulemaking process," according to John Devine, an attorney with the Natural Resources Defense Council. Trump's executive order has also drawn harsh criticism from environmental groups. Earth Justice accused the president of demonstrating that he puts the interests of corporate polluters above the public's health. Attorney General Becerra and eight attorneys general filed their official comments to the EPA and the Army Corps of Engineers. Their comments contend that the Trump administration is violating the Administrative Procedure Act by ignoring factual findings supporting the Clean Water Rule. California's Attorney General Becerra says the Trump administration is attempting to weaken protections for California's waters. Whose interests are they watching out for? He asks. I fully support the Clean Water Rule because it was legally promulgated based on science and will help protect our water resources. The stakes are high for California. If the Clean Water Rule is rolled back, many of our waterways may lose critical protections. The California Department of Justice refuses to stand idly by and let that happen, Becerra concludes.
This is Meridian Broaddus with news from the County of San Diego on a new grant that aims to keep our streets safer. The County Probation Department will use a $500,000 grant to keep high-risk DUI offenders from getting behind the wheel again. Nationally, nearly one-third of all drivers arrested or convicted of drunk driving are repeat offenders, and 50 to 75% of convicted drivers continue to drive on a suspended license, according to Mothers Against Drunk Driving. A $535,000 grant to the San Diego County Probation Department from the California Office of Traffic Safety will help the department make sure high-risk felony and repeat DUI offenders are complying with all court orders. These offenders are overrepresented in traffic crashes involving alcohol and other drugs, often with tragic results. County Probation Chief Adolfo Gonzalez says, the funding is vital to our efforts to reduce and try to stop alcohol or drug-impaired driving by people who have already been convicted of this offense. Intensive monitoring paired with treatment and counseling are how we are tackling this serious threat to public safety. The grant will allow probation department personnel to intensely monitor drivers on probation for felony DUI or multiple misdemeanor DUI convictions, including conducting unannounced home searches and random alcohol and drug testing, special monitoring to ensure compliance with court-ordered DUI education and treatment programs, and ensuring that all officers in the program have standardized field sobriety testing certified training. This grant puts special focus on high-risk repeat DUI offenders aimed at reducing the number of persons killed and injured in alcohol and other drug-related collisions in the county. From July 2014 to June 2015, 74 people were killed and 1,582 people were injured in such crashes in San Diego County, according to the California Highway Patrol. California's Office of Traffic Safety Director Rhonda Kraft states, probation orders help ensure that these offenders are not a risk to themselves or others. By working on compliance, the San Diego County Probation Department, with assistance from the Office of Traffic Safety, will be helping to keep the streets across San Diego County safe for all, she concludes. The state agency recently launched a new awareness campaign called DUI Doesn't Just Mean Booze to educate motorists about all of the substances that can lead to a DUI arrest. While alcohol remains the top source of intoxication for DUI crashes, prescription medications, street drugs, and marijuana can also impair drivers when used alone or in combination with alcohol. Funding for the grant is from the California Office of Traffic Safety through the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
This is Liz Albert with an Aztecs football report. Rashad Penny ran 30 times for a career-high 253 yards and 2 touchdowns last Saturday night, and San Diego State beat Hawaii 28-7. Penny led the way with runs on all 6 plays of a 99-yard drive when the Aztecs broke away early in the fourth quarter. The Rainbow Warriors struggled to establish their running game. The Yosemite St. Just had 200-yard rushing games coming into Saturday, but was contained to just 40 yards on 17 carries by the Aztecs defense. San Diego State jumped to a 14-0 lead with Juwan Washington's 1-yard run late in the first quarter and Christian Chapman's 16-yard pass to Michael Holder early in the second. Drew Brown cut the deficit to 14-7 on a 1-yard keeper for Hawaii in the final minute of the first half. Penny's first touchdown run made it 21-7 with 10:23 left in the third quarter. Penny sealed the win for the Aztecs with a 24-yarder followed by a 63-yard touchdown run to make it 28-7 with 13:33 left. The Aztecs remain on the road for this week, but are back in California visiting San Jose State. Kickoff on Saturday is scheduled for 7:30 p.m.
The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
Waste Management of San Diego and the Mother Goose Parade Association have launched a non-perishable food drive benefiting the East County Transitional Living Center, a faith-based facility which provides housing to help the homeless and others in need. The holiday season food drive will run through November 15th, with local businesses serving as drop-off sites, and will culminate with food collected by Waste Management at the Mother Goose Parade on November 19th. Daryl Priest, president of the Mother Goose Parade Association, says, "We are thankful to be counting on Waste Management as a chapter sponsor of this year's Mother Goose Parade and thrilled to be joining them to address a very important need in our community." Christine Costa, Municipal Affairs Representative for Waste Management of San Diego State, "As a business partner in East County, we are grateful for the many local businesses and organizations who have joined our efforts so that we may address hunger in our local communities. What better way to welcome the holiday season than to come together as one to help families in need?" Community members wanting to donate food items may do so by dropping them off at Waste Management's El Cajon office at 1001 West Bradley Avenue from Monday through Friday between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. or any of these drop-off sites: El Cajon City Hall, the East County Chamber of Commerce, Santee Chamber of Commerce, First Citizens Bank on Main Street in El Cajon, or the East County Family YMCA in Santee. You can also bring your non-perishable food items to the Mother Goose Parade, which will be held in downtown El Cajon on November 19th. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Meridian Broadus.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.